The whole place was dead silent now, and Bean could see, looking at the ones he recognized as having been with Bonzo's group last night, that he was getting through to them. "Oh, you forgot the buggers, is that it? You forgot that this battle school wasn't put here so you could write home to Mommy about your high standings on the scoreboard? So you go ahead and help Bonzo out, and while you're at it, why not just slit your own throats, too? Because that's what you're doing if you hurt Ender Wiggin. But for the rest of us? Well, how many here think that Ender Wiggin is the one commander we would all want to follow into battle? Come on, how many of you?" Bean began to clap his hands slowly, rhythmically. Immediately, all the dragons joined in. And very quickly, most of the rest of the soldiers were also clapping. The ones who weren't were conspicuous and could see how the others looked at them with scorn or hate. Pretty soon, the whole room was clapping. Even the food servers. Bean thrust both his hands straight up in the air. "The butt-faced buggers are the only enemy. Humans are all on the same side. Anybody who raises a hand against Ender Wiggin is a bugger lover." They responded with cheers and applause, leaping to their feet. It was Bean's first attempt at rabble-rousing. He was pleased to see that, as long as the cause was right, he was pretty damn good at it. Only later, when he had his food and was sitting with Seatoon, eating it, did Lighter himself come up to Bean. He came up from behind, and the rest of Seatoon was on their feet, ready to take him on before Bean even knew he was there. But Lighter motioned them to sit down, then leaned over and spoke right into Bean's ear. "Listen to this, Queen Stupid. The soldiers who were planning to take Wiggin apart aren't even here. So much for your stupid speech." Then he was gone. And a moment later, so was Bean, with Seatoon gathering the rest of Dragon Army to follow behind him. Ender wasn't in his quarters, or at least he didn't answer. Flymolo, as A-Toon commander, took charge and divided them into groups to search the barracks, the game room, the vid room, the library, the gym. But Bean called out for his squad to follow him. To the bathroom. That's the one place that Bonzo and his boys could plan on Ender having to go eventually. By the time Bean got there, it was all over. Teachers and medical staff were clattering down the halls. Dink Meeker was walking with Ender, his arm across Ender's shoulder, away from the bathroom. Ender was wearing only his towel. He was wet, and there was blood all over the back of his head and dripping down his back. It took Bean only a moment to realize that it was not his blood. The others from Bean's squad watched as Dink led Ender back to his quarters and helped him inside. But Bean was already on his way to the bathroom. The teachers ordered him out of the way, out of the corridor. But Bean saw enough. Bonzo lying on the floor, medical staff doing CPR. Bean knew that you don't do that to somebody whose heart is beating. And from the inattentive way the others were standing around, Bean knew it was only a formality. Nobody expected Bonzo's heart to start again. No surprise. His nose had been jammed up inside his head. His face was a mass of blood, which explained the bloody back of Ender's head. All our efforts didn't amount to squat. But Ender won anyway. He knew this was coming. He learned self-defense. He used it, and he didn't do a half-assed job of it either. If Ender had been Poke's friend, Poke wouldn't have died. And if Ender had depended on Bean to save him, he'd be just as dead as Poke. Rough hands dragged Bean off his feet, pushed him against a wall. "What did you see?" demanded Major Anderson.
"Nothing," said Bean. "Is that Bonzo in there? Is he hurt?"
"This is none of your business. Didn't you hear us order you away?" Colonel Graff arrived then, and Bean could see that the teachers around him were furious at him, yet couldn't say anything, either because of military protocol or because one of the children was present. "I think Bean has stuck his nose into things once too often," said Anderson.
"Are you going to send Bonzo home?" asked Bean.
"'Cause he's just going to try it again." Graff gave him a withering glance. "I heard about your speech in the mess hall," said Graff.
I didn't know we brought you up here to be a politician. If you don't ice Bonesaw and get him out of here, Ender's never going to be safe, and we won't stand for it.
Mind your own business, little boy, said Graf. This is men's work here.
Bean let himself be dragged away by Dymac. Just in case they still wondered whether Bean saw that Bonesaw was dead, he kept the act going just a little longer. He's going to come after me, too, he said. I don't want Bonesaw coming after me.
He's not coming after you, said Dymac. He's going home. Count on it. But don't talk about this to anyone else. Let them find out when the official word is given out. Got it?
Yes, sir, said Bean.
And where did you get all that nonsense about not obeying a commander who gives illegal orders?
From the Uniform Code of Military Conduct, said Bean.
Well, here's a little fact for you. Nobody has ever been prosecuted for obeying orders.
That, said Bean, is because nobody's done anything so outrageous that the general public got involved.
The Uniform Code doesn't apply to students, at least not that part of it.
But it applies to teachers, said Bean. It applies to you. Just in case you obeyed any illegal or improper orders today. By, what, I don't know, standing by while a fight broke out in a bathroom? Just because your commanding officer told you to let a big kid beat up on a little kid?
If that information bothered Dymac, he gave no sign. He stood in the corridor and watched as Bean went into the Dragon Army barracks. It was crazy inside. Dragon Army felt completely helpless and stupid, furious and ashamed. Bonesaw Madrid had outsmarted them. Bonesaw had gotten Ender alone. Where were Ender's soldiers when he needed them?
It took a long time for things to calm down.
Through it all, Bean just sat on his bunk, thinking his own thoughts. Ender didn't just win his fight, didn't just protect himself and walk away. Ender killed him, struck a blow so devastating that his enemy will never, never come after him again.
Ender Wiggin, you're the one who was born to be commander of the fleet that defends Earth from the Third Invasion. Because that's what we need. Someone who will strike the most brutal blow possible, with perfect aim and with no regard for consequences. Total war. Me. I'm no Ender Wiggin. I'm just a street kid whose only skill was staying alive. Somehow. The only time I was in real danger, I ran like a squirrel and took refuge with Sister Carlotta. Ender went alone into battle. I go alone into my hidey hole. I'm the guy who makes big, brave speeches standing on tables in the mess hall. Ender's the guy who meets the enemy naked and overpowers him against all odds. Whatever genes they altered to make me, they weren't the ones that mattered. Ender almost died because of me. Because I goaded Bonesaw. Because I failed to keep watch at the crucial time. Because I didn't stop and think like Bonesaw and figure out that he'd wait for Ender to be alone in the shower. If Ender had died today, it would have been my fault all over again. He wanted to kill somebody. Couldn't be Bonesaw. Bonesaw was already dead. Ashiel. That's the one he needed to kill. And if Ashiel had been there at that moment, Bean would have tried. Might have succeeded, too, if violent rage and desperate shame were enough to beat down any advantage of size and experience Ashiel might have had. And if Ashiel killed Bean anyway, it was no worse than Bean deserved for having failed Ender Wiggin so completely. He felt his bed bounce. Nikolai had jumped the gap between the upper bunks.
It's okay, murmured Nikolai, touching Bean's shoulder.
Bean rolled onto his back to face Nikolai.
Oh, said Nikolai. I thought you were crying.
Ender won, said Bean. What's to cry about?
Chapter 18. Friend.
This boy's death was not necessary.
This boy's death was not foreseen.
But it was foreseeable.
You can always foresee things that already happened. These are children, after all. We did not anticipate this level of violence.
I don't believe you. I believe that this is precisely the level of violence you anticipated. This is what you set up. You think that the experiment succeeded.
I can't control your opinions. I can merely disagree with them.
Ender Wiggin is ready to move on to command school. That is my report.
I have a separate report from DAP, the teacher assigned to watch him most closely, and that report, for which there are to be no sanctions against Captain DAP, tells me that Andrew Wiggin is psychologically unfit for duty.
If he is, which I doubt, it is only temporary.
How much time do you think we have? No, Colonel Graff. For the time being, we have to regard your course of action regarding Wiggin as a failure, and the boy as ruined, not only for our purposes, but quite possibly for any other as well. So if it can be done without further killings, I want the other one pushed forward. I want him here in command school as close to immediately as possible.
Very well, sir. Though I must tell you that I regard Bean as unreliable.
Why? Because you haven't turned him into a killer yet?
Because he is not human, sir.
The genetic difference is well within the range of ordinary variation.
He was manufactured, and the manufacturer was a criminal, not to mention a certified loon.
I could see some danger if his father were a criminal, or his mother. But his doctor? The boy is exactly what we need as quickly as we can get him.
He is unpredictable.
And the Wiggin boy is not?
Less unpredictable, sir.
Very carefully answered, considering that you just insisted that the murder today was not foreseeable.
Not murder, sir.
Killing, then.
The metal of the Wiggin boy is proved, sir, while Bean is not.
I have Dymac's report, for which, again, he is not to be...
Punished, I know, sir.
Bean's behavior throughout this set of events has been exemplary.
Then Captain Dymac's report was incomplete. Didn't he inform you that it was Bean who may have pushed Bonzo over the edge to violence by breaking security and informing him that Ender's army was composed of exceptional students?
That was an act with unforeseeable consequences.
Bean was acting to save his own life, and in so doing he shunted the danger onto Ender Wiggin's shoulders. That he later tried to ameliorate the danger does not change the fact that when Bean is under pressure, he turns traitor.
Harsh language.
This from the man who just called an obvious act of self-defense murder.
Enough of this. You are on leave of absence from your position as commander of battle school for the duration of Ender Wiggin's so-called rest and recuperation. If Wiggin recovers enough to come to command school, you may come with him and continue to have influence over the education of the children we bring here. If he does not, you may await your court-martial on Earth.
I am relieved. Effective when?
When you get on the shuttle with Wiggin. Major Anderson will stand in as acting commander.
Very well, sir. Wiggin will return to training, sir.
If we still want him.
When you are over the dismay we all feel at the unfortunate death of the Madrid boy, you will realize that I am right, and Ender is the only viable candidate, all the more now than before.
I allow you that Parthian shot. And if you are right, I wish you godspeed on your work with the Wiggin boy. Dismissed.
Ender was still wearing only his towel when he stepped into the barracks. Bean saw him standing there, his face a rictus of death, and thought, he knows that Bonzo is dead, and it's killing him. "Ho, Ender," said Hot Soup, who was standing near the door with the other toon leaders. "There going to be a practice tonight?" asked one of the younger soldiers. Ender handed a slip of paper to Hot Soup. "I guess that means not," said Nikolai softly. Hot Soup read it. "Those sons of bitches. Two at once?" Crazy Tom looked over his shoulder. "Two armies?" "They'll just trip over each other," said Bean. What appalled him most about the teachers was not the stupidity of trying to combine armies, a ploy whose ineffectiveness had been proved time after time throughout history, but rather the get-back-on-the-horse mentality that led them to put more pressure on Ender at this of all times. Couldn't they see the damage they were doing to him? Was their goal to train him or break him? Because he was trained long since. He should have been promoted out of battle school the week before. And now they give him one more battle, a completely meaningless one, when he's already over the edge of despair? "I've got to clean up," said Ender. "Get them ready. Get everybody together. I'll meet you there at the gate."
In his voice, Bean heard a complete lack of interest. No, something deeper than that. Ender doesn't want to win this battle. Ender turned to leave. Everyone saw the blood on his head, his shoulders, down his back. He left. They all ignored the blood. They had to. "Two fart-eating armies," cried Crazy Tom. "We'll whip their butts." That seemed to be the general consensus as they got into their flash suits. Bean tucked the coil of deadline into the waist of his flash suit. If Ender ever needed a stunt, it would be for this battle, when he was no longer interested in winning. As promised, Ender joined them at the gate before it opened. Just barely before. He walked down the corridor lined with his soldiers, who looked at him with love, with awe, with trust. Except Bean, who looked at him with anguish. Ender Wiggin was not larger than life, Bean knew. He was exactly life-sized, and so his larger-than-life burden was too much for him. And yet he was bearing it. So far. The gate went transparent. 4 stars had been combined directly in front of the gate, completely blocking their view of the battle room. Ender would have to deploy his forces blind. For all he knew, the enemy had already been let into the room 15 minutes ago. For all he could possibly know, they were deployed just as Bonesaw had deployed his army, only this time it would be completely effective to have the gate ringed with enemy soldiers. But Ender said nothing, just stood there looking at the barrier. Bean had halfway expected this. He was ready. What he did wasn't all that obvious. He only walked forward to stand directly beside Ender at the gate. But he knew that was all it would take. A reminder. "Bean," said Ender, "take your boys and tell me what's on the other side of this star." "Yes, sir," said Bean. He pulled the coil of deadline from his waist, and with his 5 soldiers he made the short hop from the gate to the star. Immediately the gate he had just come through became the ceiling, the star their temporary floor. Bean tied the deadline around his waist while the other boys unspooled the line, arranging it in loose coils on the star. When it was about 1/3 played out, Bean declared it to be sufficient. He was guessing that the 4 stars were really 8, that they made a perfect cube. If he was wrong, then he had way too much deadline and he'd crash into the ceiling instead of making it back behind the star. Worse things could happen. He slipped out beyond the edge of the star. He was right, it was a cube. It was too dim in the room to see well what the other armies were doing, but they seemed to be deploying. There had been no head start this time, apparently. He quickly reported this to Ducheval, who would repeat it to Ender while Bean did his stunt. Ender would no doubt start bringing out the rest of the army at once, before the time clicked down to 0. Bean launched straight down from the ceiling. Above him, his tune was holding the other end of the deadline secure, making sure it fed out properly and stopped abruptly. Bean did not enjoy the wrenching of his gut when the deadline went taut, but there was a kind of thrill to the increase of speed as he suddenly moved south. He could see the distant flashing of the enemy firing up at him. Only soldiers from 1/2 of the enemy's area were firing. When the deadline reached the next edge of the cube, his speed increased again, and now he was headed upward in an arc that for a moment looked like it was going to scrape him against the ceiling. Then the last edge bit, and he scooted in behind the star and was caught deftly by his tune. Bean wiggled his arms and legs to show that he was none the worse for his ride. What the enemy was thinking about his magical maneuvers in midair, he could only guess. What mattered was the Ender had not come through the gate. The timer must be nearly out. Ender came alone through the gate. Bean made his report as quickly as possible. "It's really dim, but light enough you can't follow people easily by the lights on their suits. Worst possible for seeing. It's all open space from this star to the enemy side of the room. They've got 8 stars making a square around their door. I didn't see anybody except the ones peeking around the boxes. They're just sitting there waiting for us." In the distance, they heard the enemy begin catcalls. "Hey, we be hungry, come and feed us. Your ass is dragging.
Your ass is dragon. Bean continued his report, but had no idea if Ender was even listening. They fired at me from only one half their space, which means that the two commanders are not agreeing and neither one has been put in supreme command. In a real war, said Ender, any commander with brains at all would retreat and save this army. What the hell? Said Bean. It's only a game. It stopped being a game when they threw away the rules. This wasn't good, thought Bean. How much time did they have to get their army through the gate? So you throw them away too? He looked Ender in the eye, demanding that he wake up, pay attention, act. The blank look left Ender's face. He grinned. It felt damn good to see that. Okay. Why not? Let's see how they react to a formation. Ender began calling the rest of the army through the gate. It was going to get crowded on the top of that star, but there was no choice. As it turned out, Ender's plan was to use another of Bean's stupid ideas, which he had watched Bean practice with his tune. A screen formation of frozen soldiers, controlled by Bean's tune, who remained unfrozen behind them. Having once told Bean what he wanted him to do, Ender joined the formation as a common soldier and left everything up to Bean to organize. It's your show, he said. Bean had never expected Ender to do any such thing, but it made a kind of sense. What Ender wanted was not to have this battle. Allowing himself to be part of a screen of frozen soldiers, pushed through the battle by someone else, was as close to sleeping through it as he could get. Bean set to work at once, constructing the screen in four parts consisting of one tune each. Each of tunes A through C lined up 4 and 3, arms interlocked with the men beside them, the upper row of 3 with toes hooked under the arms of the 4 soldiers below. When everybody was clamped down tight, Bean and his tune froze them. Then each of Bean's men took hold of one section of the screen and, careful to move very slowly so that inertia would not carry the screen out of their control, they maneuvered them out from above the star and slowly moved them down until they were just under it. Then they joined them back together into a single screen, with Bean's squad forming the interlock.
When did you guys practice this? Asked Dumper, the leader of E-Tune.
We've never done this before, Bean answered truthfully. We've done bursting and linking with one-man screens, but 7 men each? It's all new to us. Dumper laughed. And there's Ender, plugged into the screen like anybody. That's trust, Bean, old boy.
That's despair, thought Bean.
But he didn't feel the need to say that aloud. When all was ready, E-Tune got into place behind the screen, and on Bean's command, pushed off as hard as they could. The screen drifted down toward the enemy's gate at a pretty good clip. Enemy fire, though it was intense, hit only the already frozen soldiers in front. E-Tune and Bean's squad kept moving very slightly, but enough that no stray shot could freeze them. And they managed to do some return fire, taking out a few of the enemy soldiers and forcing them to stay behind cover. When Bean figured they were as far as they could get before Griffin or Tiger launched an attack, he gave the word and his squad burst apart, causing the 4 sections of the screen also to separate and angle slightly so they were drifting now toward the corners of the stars where Griffin and Tiger were gathered. E-Tune went with the screens, firing like crazy, trying to make up for their tiny numbers. After a count of 3, the 4 members of Bean's squad who had gone with each screen pushed off again, this time angling to the middle and downward, so that they rejoined Bean and Ducheval, with momentum carrying them straight toward the enemy gate. They held their bodies rigid, not firing a shot, and it worked. They were all small. They were clearly drifting, not moving with any particular purpose. The enemy took them for frozen soldiers if they were noticed at all. A few were partially disabled with stray shots, but even when under fire they never moved, and the enemy soon ignored them. When they got to the enemy gate, Bean slowly, wordlessly, got 4 of them with their helmets in place at the corners of the gate. They pressed, just as in the end-of-game ritual, and Bean gave Ducheval a push, sending him through the gate as Bean drifted upward again.
The lights in the battle room went on. The weapons all went dead. The battle was over. It took a few moments before Griffin and Tiger realized what had happened. Dragon only had a few soldiers who weren't frozen or disabled, while Griffin and Tiger were mostly unscathed, having played conservative strategies. Bean knew that if either of them had been aggressive, Ender's strategy wouldn't have worked. But having seen Bean fly around the star, doing the impossible, and then watching this weird screen approach so slowly, they were intimidated into inaction. Ender's legend was such that they dared not commit their forces for fear of falling into a trap. Only, that was the trap. Major Anderson came into the room through the teacher gate. "Ender," he called. Ender was frozen. He could only answer by grunting loudly through clenched jaws. That was a sound that victorious commanders rarely had to make. Anderson, using the hook, drifted over to Ender and thawed him. Bean was half the battle room away, but he heard Ender's words, so clear was his speech, so silent was the room. "I beat you again, sir." Bean's squad members glanced at him, obviously wondering if he was resentful at Ender for claiming credit for a victory that was engineered and executed entirely by Bean. But Bean understood what Ender was saying. He wasn't talking about the victory over Griffin and Tiger armies. He was talking about a victory over the teachers. And that victory was the decision to turn the army over to Bean and sit it out himself. If they thought they were putting Ender to the ultimate test, making him fight two armies right after a personal fight for survival in the bathroom, he beat them. He sidestepped the test. Anderson knew what Ender was saying, too. "Nonsense, Ender," said Anderson. He spoke softly, but the room was so silent that his words, too, could be heard. "Your battle was with Griffin and Tiger." "How stupid do you think I am?" said Ender. "Damn right," said Bean silently. Anderson spoke to the group at large. "After that little maneuver, the rules are being revised to require that all of the enemy's soldiers must be frozen or disabled before the gate can be reversed." "Rules?" murmured Ducheval as he came back through the gate. Bean grinned at him. "It could only work once anyway," said Ender. Anderson handed the hook to Ender. Instead of thawing his soldiers one at a time, and only then thawing the enemy, Ender entered the command to thaw everyone at once, then handed the hook back to Anderson, who took it and drifted away toward the center, where the end-of-game rituals usually took place. "Hey," Ender shouted, "what is it next time? My army in a cage without guns, with the rest of the battle school against them? How about a little equality?" So many soldiers murmured their agreement that the sound of it was loud, and not all came from Dragon Army. But Anderson seemed to pay no attention. It was William B. of Griffin Army who said what almost everyone was thinking. "Ender, if you're on one side of the battle, it won't be equal no matter what the conditions are." The armies vocally agreed, many of the soldiers laughing, and Talo Momo, not to be outclassed by B, started clapping his hands rhythmically. "Ender Wiggin," he shouted. Other boys took up the chant. But Bean knew the truth. Knew, in fact, what Ender knew. That no matter how good a commander was, no matter how resourceful, no matter how well prepared his army, no matter how excellent his lieutenants, no matter how courageous and spirited the fight, victory almost always went to the side with the greater power to inflict damage. Sometimes David kills Goliath, and people never forget. But there were a lot of little guys Goliath had already mashed into the ground. Nobody sang songs about those fights because they knew that was the likely outcome. No, that was the inevitable outcome, except for the miracles. The buggers wouldn't know or care how legendary a commander Ender might be to his own men. The human ships wouldn't have any magical tricks like Bean's deadline to dazzle the buggers with to put them off their stride. Ender knew that. Bean knew that.
What if David hadn't had a sling, a handful of stones, and the time to throw? What good would the excellence of his aim have done him then? So yes, it was good. It was right for the soldiers of all three armies to cheer Ender, to chant his name as he drifted toward the enemy gate, where Bean and his squad waited for him. But in the end it meant nothing, except that everyone would have too much hope in Ender's ability. It only made the burden on Ender heavier.
"I would carry some of it if I could," Bean said silently. "Like I did today. You can turn it over to me and I'll do it if I can. You don't have to do this alone."
Only even as he thought this, Bean knew it wasn't true. If it could be done, Ender was the one who would have to do it. All those months when Bean refused to see Ender, hid from him, it was because he couldn't bear to face the fact that Ender was what Bean only wished to be. The kind of person on whom you could put all your hopes, who could carry all your fears, and he would not let you down, would not betray you.
"I want to be the kind of boy you are," thought Bean. "But I don't want to go through what you've been through to get there."
And then, as Ender passed through the gate and Bean followed behind him, Bean remembered falling into line behind Polk or Sergeant or a Shield on the streets of Rotterdam, and he almost laughed as he thought, "I don't want to have to go through what I've gone through to get here either." Out in the corridor, Ender walked away instead of waiting for his soldiers. But not fast, and soon they caught up with him, surrounded him, brought him to a stop through their sheer ebullience. Only his silence, his impassivity, kept them from giving full vent to their excitement. "Practice tonight?" asked Crazy Tom. Ender shook his head.
"Tomorrow morning, then?"
"No."
"Well, when?"
"Never again, as far as I'm concerned." Not everyone had heard, but those who did began to murmur to each other.
"Hey, that's not fair," said a soldier from B-Tune. "It's not our fault the teachers are screwing up the game. You can't just stop teaching us stuff because..."
Ender slammed his hand against the wall and shouted at the kid.
"I don't care about the game anymore."
He looked at other soldiers, met their gaze, refused to let them pretend they didn't hear.
"Do you understand that?"
Then he whispered, "The game is over." He walked away. Some of the boys wanted to follow him, took a few steps. But Hot Soup grabbed a couple of them by the neck of their flash suits and said, "Let him be alone. Can't you see he wants to be alone?" Of course he wants to be alone, thought Bean. He killed the kid today. And even if he doesn't know the outcome, he knows what was at stake. These teachers were willing to let him face death without help. Why should he play along with them anymore? Good for you, Ender. Not so good for the rest of us, but it's not like you're our father or something. More like a brother. And the thing with brothers is you're supposed to take turns being the keeper. Sometimes you get to sit down and be the brother who is kept. Fly Molo led them back to the barracks. Bean followed along, wishing he could go with Ender, talk to him, assure him that he agreed completely, that he understood. But that was pathetic, Bean realized. Why should Ender care whether I understand him or not? I'm just a kid, just one of his army. He knows me. He knows how to use me. But what does he care whether I know him? Bean climbed to his bunk and saw a slip of paper on it. "Transfer. Bean, Rabbit Army, Commander." That was Karn Carby's army. Karn was being removed from command? He was a good guy. Not a great commander, but why couldn't they wait till he graduated? Because they're through with this school, that's why. They're advancing everybody they think needs some experience with command, and they're graduating other students to make room for them. I might have Rabbit Army, but not for long, I bet. He pulled out his desk, meaning to sign on as Carrot Graf and check the rosters. Find out what was happening to everybody. But the Carrot Graf login didn't work. Apparently they no longer considered it useful to permit Bean to keep his inside access. From the back of the room, the older boys were raising a hubbub. Bean heard Crazy Tom's voice rising above the rest. "You mean I'm supposed to figure out how to beat Dragon Army?" Words soon filtered to the front. The toon leaders and seconds had all received transfer orders. Every single one of them was being given command of an army. Dragon had been stripped. After about a minute of chaos, Fly Molo led the other toon leaders along between the bunks, heading toward the door. Of course, they had to go tell Ender what the teachers had done to him now. But to Bean's surprise, Fly stopped at his bunk and looked up at him, then glanced at the other toon leaders behind him. "Bean, somebody's got to tell Ender." Bean nodded. "We thought, since you're his friend..." Bean let nothing show on his face, but he was stunned. "Me? Ender's friend? No more than anyone else in this room." And then he realized. In this army, Ender had everyone's love and admiration. And they all knew they had Ender's trust. But only Bean had been taken inside Ender's confidence when Ender assigned him his special squad. And when Ender wanted to stop playing the game, it was Bean to whom he had turned over his army. Bean was the closest thing to a friend they had seen Ender have since he got command of Dragon. Bean looked across at Nikolai, who was grinning his ass off. Nikolai saluted him and mouthed the word, "Commander." Bean saluted Nikolai back, but could not smile, knowing what this would do to Ender. He nodded to Fly Molo, then slid off the bunk and went out the door. He didn't go straight to Ender's quarters, though. Instead, he went to Karn Karby's room. No one answered. So he went on to Rabbit Barracks and knocked. "Where's Karn?" he asked. "Graduated," said Itu, the leader of Rabbit's A-tune. "He found out about half an hour ago. We were in battle." "I know. Two armies at once. You won, right?" Bean nodded. "I bet Karn wasn't the only one graduated early." "A lot of commanders," said Itu. "More than half."
"Including Bonzo Madrid?
I mean, he graduated?"
"That's what the official notice said." Itu shrugged. "Everybody knows that if anything, Bonzo was probably iced. I mean, they didn't even list his assignment. Just Cartagena. His hometown. He's that iced or what? But let the teachers call it what they want."
"I'll bet the total who graduated was 9, said Bean.
"Eh?"
"Eh," said Itu.
9. "So you know something?"
"Bad news, I think," said Bean. He showed Itu his transfer orders.
"Santa merda," said Itu.
Then he saluted. Not sarcastically, but not enthusiastically either.
"Would you mind breaking it to the others? Give them a chance to get used to the idea before I show up for real? I've got to go talk to Ender. Maybe he already knows they've just taken his entire leadership and given them armies. But if he doesn't, I've got to tell him."
"Every Dragon Toon Leader?"
"And every second."
He thought of saying, "Sorry, Rabbit got stuck with me." But Ender would never have said anything self-belittling like that. And if Bean was going to be a commander, he couldn't start out with an apology.
"I think Karn Karby had a good organization," said Bean. "So I don't expect to change any of the toon leadership for the first week anyway, till I see how things go in practice and decide what shape we're in for the kind of battles we're going to start having now that most of the commanders are kids trained in Dragon."
Itu understood immediately.
"Man, that's going to be strange, isn't it? Ender trained all you guys, and now you've got to fight each other."
"One thing's for sure," said Bean. "I have no intention of trying to turn Rabbit into a copy of Ender's Dragon. We're not the same kids, and we won't be fighting the same opponents. Rabbit's a good army. We don't have to copy anybody."
Itu grinned.
"Even if that's just bullshit, sir, it's first-rate bullshit. I'll pass it on."
He saluted. Bean saluted back. Then he jogged to Ender's quarters. Ender's mattress and blankets and pillow had been thrown out into the corridor. For a moment, Bean wondered why. Then he saw that the sheets and mattress were still damp and bloody. Water from Ender's shower. Blood from Bonzo's face. Apparently, Ender didn't want them in his room. Bean knocked on the door. "Go away," said Ender softly. Bean knocked again, then again. "Come in," said Ender. Bean palmed the door open. "Go away, Bean," said Ender. Bean nodded. He understood the sentiment, but he had to deliver his message. So he just looked at his shoes and waited for Ender to ask him his business, or yell at him. Whatever Ender wanted to do. Because the other Toon leaders were wrong. Bean didn't have any special relationship with Ender. Not outside the game. Ender said nothing, and continued to say nothing. Bean looked up from the ground and saw Ender gazing at him. Not angry, just watching. "What does he see in me?" Bean wondered. "How well does he know me? What does he think of me? What do I amount to in his eyes?" That was something Bean would probably never know. And he had come here for another purpose. Time to carry it out. He took a step closer to Ender. He turned his hand so the transfer slip was visible. He didn't offer it to Ender, but he knew Ender would see it. "You're transferred?" asked Ender. His voice sounded dead, as if he'd been expecting it.
"To Rabbit Army," said Bean.
Ender nodded. "Karn Karby's a good man. I hope he recognizes what you're worth." The words came to Bean like a longed-for blessing. He swallowed the emotion that welled up inside him. He still had more of his message to deliver.
"Karn Karby was graduated today," said Bean. "He got his notice while we were fighting our battle."
"Well," said Ender. "Who's commanding Rabbit then?" He didn't sound all that interested. The question was expected, so he asked it.
"Me," said Bean.
He was embarrassed. A smile came inadvertently to his lips. Ender looked at the ceiling and nodded.
"Of course.
After all, you're only 4 years younger than the regular age."
"It isn't funny," said Bean. "I don't know what's going on here.
Except that the system seems to be running on sheer panic.
All the changes in the game? And now this. I wasn't the only one transferred, you know. They graduated half the commanders and transferred a lot of our guys to command their armies."
"Which guys?" Now Ender did sound interested.
"It looks like every Toon leader and every assistant."
"Of course. If they decide to wreck my army, they'll cut it to the ground. Whatever they're doing, they're thorough."
"You'll still win, Ender. We all know that. Crazy Tom, he said, 'You mean I'm supposed to figure out how to beat Dragon Army?' Everybody knows you're the best."
His words sounded empty even to himself. He wanted to be encouraging, but he knew the Ender knew better. Still, he babbled on.
"They can't break you down, no matter what they—"
"They already have."
"They've broken trust," Bean wanted to say. "That's not the same thing. You aren't broken. They're broken."
But all that came out of his mouth were empty, limping words.
"No, Ender, they can't—"
"I don't care about their game anymore, Bean," said Ender. "I'm not going to play it anymore. No more practices. No more battles. They can put their little slips of paper on the floor all they want, but I won't go. I decided that before I went through the door today. That's why I had you go for the gate. I didn't think it would work, but I didn't care. I just wanted to go out in style."
"I know that," thought Bean. "You think I didn't know that? But if it comes down to style, you certainly got that."
"You should have seen William B.'s face. He just stood there trying to figure out how he had lost when you only had 7 boys who could wiggle their toes and he only had 3 who couldn't.
Why should I want to see William B.'s face? Said Ender. Why should I want to beat anybody?
Bean felt the heat of embarrassment in his face. He'd said the wrong thing. Only, he didn't know what the right thing was. Something to make Ender feel better. Something to make him understand how much he was loved and honored. Only that love and honor were part of the burden Ender bore. There was nothing Bean could say that would not make it all the heavier on Ender. So he said nothing. Ender pressed his palms against his eyes.
I hurt Bone so really bad today, Bean. I really hurt him bad.
Of course. All this other stuff, that's nothing. What weighs on Ender is that terrible fight in the bathroom. The fight that your friends, your army, did nothing to prevent. And what hurts you is not the danger you were in, but the harm you did in protecting yourself.
He had it coming, said Bean. He winced at his own words.
Was that the best he could come up with?
But what else could he say?
No problem, Ender. Of course, he looked dead to me, and I'm probably the only kid in this school who actually knows what death looks like, but no problem. Nothing to worry about. He had it coming.
I knocked him out standing up, said Ender. It was like he was dead standing there. And I kept hurting him.
So he did know. And yet, he didn't actually know. And Bean wasn't about to tell him. There were times for absolute honesty between friends, but this wasn't one of them.
I just wanted to make sure he never hurt me again.
He won't, said Bean. They sent him home.
Already?
Bean told him what Itu had said. All the while, he felt like Ender could see that he was concealing something. Surely it was impossible to deceive Ender Wiggin.
I'm glad they graduated him, said Ender.
Some graduation. They're going to bury him or cremate him or whatever they're doing with corpses in Spain this year.
Spain.
Pablo de Noches, who saved his life, came from Spain. And now a body was going back there. A boy who turned killer in his heart and died for it.
I must be losing it, thought Bean.
What does it matter that Bonzo was Spanish and Pablo de Noches was Spanish? What does it matter that anybody is anything? And while these thoughts ran through Bean's mind, he babbled, trying to talk like someone who didn't know anything, trying to reassure Ender, but knowing that if Ender believed that he knew nothing, then his words were meaningless. And if Ender realized that Bean was only faking ignorance, then his words were all lies.
Was it true he had a whole bunch of guys gang up on you?
Bean wanted to run from the room. He sounded so lame, even to himself.
No, said Ender. It was just him and me.
He fought with honor. Bean was relieved. Ender was turned so deeply inward right now that he didn't even register what Bean was saying. How false it was.
I didn't fight with honor, said Ender. I fought to win.
Yes, that's right, thought Bean. Fought the only way that's worth fighting, the only way that has any point.
And you did.
Kicked him right out of orbit.
It was as close as Bean could come to telling him the truth.
There was a knock on the door. Then it opened immediately without waiting for an answer. Before Bean could turn to see who it was, he knew it was a teacher. Ender looked up too high for it to be a kid. Major Anderson and Colonel Graff.
Ender Wiggin, said Graff.
Ender rose to his feet.
Yes, sir.
The deadness had returned to his voice.
Your display of temper in the battle room today was insubordinate and is not to be repeated.
Bean couldn't believe the stupidity of it. After what Ender had been through, what the teachers had put him through, and they have to keep playing this oppressive game with him? Making him feel utterly alone even now? These guys were relentless.
Ender's only answer was another lifeless, "Yes, sir." But Bean was fed up.
"I think it was about time somebody told a teacher how we felt about what you've been doing."
Anderson and Graff didn't show a sign they'd even heard him. Instead, Anderson handed Ender a full sheet of paper. Not a transfer slip. A full-fledged set of orders. Ender was being transferred out of the school.
"Graduated?" Bean asked.
Ender nodded.
"What took them so long?" asked Bean.
"You're only 2 or 3 years early. You've already learned how to walk and talk and dress yourself. What will they have left to teach you?"
The whole thing was such a joke. Did they really think anybody was fooled? You reprimand Ender for insubordination, but then you graduate him because you've got a war coming and you don't have a lot of time to get him ready. He's your hope of victory, and you treat him like something you scrape off your shoe.
All I know is, the game's over, said Ender. He folded the paper.
None too soon.
Can I tell my army?
There isn't time, said Graff.
Your shuttle leaves in 20 minutes. Besides, it's better not to talk to them after you get your orders.
It makes it easier.
For them or for you? Ender asked. He turned to Bean, took his hand. To Bean, it was like the touch of the finger of God. It sent light all through him.
Maybe I am his friend.
Maybe he feels toward me some small part of the feeling I have for him. And then it was over. Ender let go of his hand. He turned toward the door.
Wait, said Bean. Where are you going? Tactical, navigational, support?
Command school, said Ender.
Pre-command?
Command. Ender was out the door. Straight to command school. The elite school whose location was even a secret. Adults went to command school. The battle must be coming very soon to skip right past all the things they were supposed to learn in tactical and pre-command. He caught Graff by the sleeve.
Nobody goes to command school until they're 16, he said.
Graff shook off Bean's hand and left. If he caught Bean's sarcasm, he gave no sign of it. The door closed. Bean was alone in Ender's quarters. He looked around. Without Ender in it, the room was nothing. Being here meant nothing. Yet it was only a few days ago, not even a week, when Bean had stood here and Ender told him he was getting a tune after all. For some reason, what came into Bean's mind was the moment when Polk handed him 6 peanuts. It was life that she handed to him then. Was it life that Ender gave to Bean? Was it the same thing?
No.
Polk gave him life. Ender gave it meaning. When Ender was here, this was the most important room in battle school. Now it was no more than a broom closet. Bean walked back down the corridor to the room that had been Karn Carby's until today, until an hour ago. He palmed it. It opened. Already programmed in. The room was empty. Nothing in it.
This room is mine, thought Bean. Mine, and yet still empty.
He felt powerful emotions welling up inside him. He should be excited, proud to have his own command. But he didn't really care about it. As Ender said, the game was nothing. Bean would do a decent job, but the reason he'd have the respect of his soldiers was because he would carry some of Ender's reflected glory with him. A shrimpy little Napoleon flumping around wearing a man's shoes while he barked commands in a little tiny child's voice. Cute little Caligula, little Boot, the pride of Germanicus's army. But when he was wearing his father's boots, those boots were empty, and Caligula knew it, and nothing he ever did could change that. Was that his madness?
It won't drive me mad, thought Bean, because I don't covet what Ender has or what he is. It's enough that he is Ender Wiggin. I don't have to be. He understood what this feeling was, welling up in him, filling his throat, making tears stand out in his eyes, making his face burn, forcing a gasp, a silent sob. He bit on his lip, trying to let pain force the emotion away. It didn't help. Ender was gone. Now that he knew what the feeling was, he could control it. He lay down on the bunk and went into the relaxing routine until the need to cry had passed. Ender had taken his hand to say goodbye. Ender had said, "I hope he recognizes what you're worth." Bean didn't really have anything left to prove. He'd do his best with Rabbit Army because maybe at some point in the future, when Ender was at the bridge of the flagship of the human fleet, Bean might have some role to play, some way to help. Some stunt that Ender might need him to pull to dazzle the buggers. So he'd please the teachers, impress the hell out of them, so that they would keep opening doors for him until one day a door would open and his friend Ender would be on the other side of it, and he could be in Ender's army once again.
Chapter 19. Rebel.
Putting in a shield was Graf's last act, and we know there were grave concerns. Why not play it safe and at least change a shield to another army?
This is not necessarily a Bonzo Madrid situation for Bean.
But we have no assurance that it's not, sir. Colonel Graf kept a lot of information to himself, a lot of conversations with Sister Carlotta, for instance, with no memo of what was said. Graf knows things about Bean, and I can promise you about a shield as well. I think he's laid a trap for us.
Wrong, Captain Dymack. If Graf laid a trap, it was not for us.
You're sure of that?
Graf doesn't play bureaucratic games. He doesn't give a damn about you and me. If he laid a trap, it's for Bean.
Well, that's my point.
I understand your point. But Ashiel stays.
Why?
Ashiel's tests show him to be of a remarkably even temperament. He's no Bonzo Madrid. Therefore, Bean is in no physical danger. The stress seems to be psychological, a test of character. And that is precisely the area where we have the very least data about Bean, given his refusal to play the mind game, the ambiguity of the information we got from his playing with his teacher login. Therefore, I think this forced relationship with his bugbear is worth pursuing.
Bugbear or nemesis, sir?
We will monitor closely. I will not be keeping adults so far removed that we can't get there to intervene in time, the way Graf arranged it with Ender and Bonzo. Every precaution will be taken. I am not playing Russian roulette the way Graf was.
Yes, you are, sir. The only difference is that he knew he had only one empty chamber, and you don't know how many chambers are empty because he loaded the gun.
On his first morning as commander of Rabbit Army, Bean woke to see a paper lying on his floor. For a moment he was stunned at the thought that he would be given a battle before he even met his army, but to his relief the note was about something much more mundane. Because of the number of new commanders, the tradition of not joining the commander's mess until after the first victory is abolished. You are to dine in the commander's mess starting immediately. It made sense. Since they were going to accelerate the battle schedule for everyone, they wanted to have the commanders in a position to share information right from the start, and to be under social pressure from their peers as well. Holding the paper in his hand, Bean remembered how Ender had held his orders, each impossible new permutation of the game. Just because this order made sense did not make it a good thing. There was nothing sacred about the game itself that made Bean resent changes in the rules and customs, but the way the teachers were manipulating them did bother him. Cutting off his access to student information, for instance. The question wasn't why they cut it off, or even why they let him have it for so long. The question was why the other commanders didn't have that much information all along. If they were supposed to be learning to lead, then they should have the tools of leadership. And as long as they were changing the system, why not get rid of the really pernicious, destructive things they did? For instance, the scoreboards in the mess halls. Standings and scores.
Instead of fighting the battle at hand, those scores made soldiers and commanders alike more cautious, less willing to experiment. That's why the ludicrous custom of fighting in formations had lasted so long. Ender can't have been the first commander to see a better way. But nobody wanted to rock the boat, to be the one who innovated and paid the price by dropping in the rankings. Far better to treat each battle as a completely separate problem, and to feel free to engage in battles as if they were play rather than work. Creativity and challenge would increase drastically, and commanders wouldn't have to worry when they gave an order to a toon or an individual whether they were causing a particular soldier to sacrifice his standing for the good of the army. Most important, though, was the challenge inherent in Ender's decision to reject the game. The fact that he graduated before he could really go on strike didn't change the fact that if he had done so, Bean would have supported him in it. Now that Ender was gone, a boycott of the game didn't make sense, especially if Bean and the others were to advance to a point where they might be part of Ender's fleet when the real battles came. But they could take charge of the game, use it for their own purposes. So, dressed in his new and ill-fitting rabbit army uniform, Bean soon found himself once again standing on a table, this time in the much smaller officer's mess. Since Bean's speech the day before was already the stuff of legend, there was laughter and some catcalling when he got up.
"Do people where you come from eat with their feet, Bean? Instead of getting up on tables, why don't you just grow, Bean? Put some stilts on so we can keep the tables clean."
But the other new commanders, who had, until yesterday, been toon leaders in Dragon Army, made no catcalls and did not laugh. Their respectful attention to Bean soon prevailed, and silence fell over the room. Bean flung up an arm to point to the scoreboard that showed the standings.
"Where's Dragon Army?" he asked.
"They dissolved it," said Petra Arcanian. "The soldiers have been folded into the other armies, except for you guys who used to be Dragon." Bean listened, keeping his opinion of her to himself. All he could think of, though, was night before last when she was, wittingly or not, the Judas who was supposed to lure Ender into a trap.
"Without Dragon up there," said Bean, "that board means nothing. Whatever standing any of us gets would not be the same if Dragon were still there."
"There's not a hell of a lot we can do about it," said Dink Meeker.
"The problem isn't that Dragon is missing," said Bean. "The problem is that we shouldn't have that board at all. We're not each other's enemies. The buggers are the only enemy. We're supposed to be allies. We should be learning from each other, sharing information and ideas. We should feel free to experiment, trying new things without being afraid of how it will affect our standings. That board up there, that's the teacher's game, getting us to turn against each other. Like Bonzo.
Nobody here is as crazy with jealousy as he was, but come on. He was what those standings were bound to create. He was all set to beat in the brains of our best commander, our best hope against the next bugger invasion. And why? Because Ender humiliated him in the standings. Think about that. The standings were more important to him than the war against the Formix."
"Bonzo was crazy," said William B.
"So let's not be crazy," said Bean. "Let's get those standings out of the game. Let's take each battle one at a time, a clean slate. Try anything you can think of to win. And when the battle is over, both commanders sit down and explain what they were thinking, why they did what they did, so we can learn from each other. No secrets. Everybody try everything. And screw the standings."
There were murmurs of assent, and not just from the former dragons.
"That's easy for you to say," said Shen. "Your standing right now is tied for last."
"And there's the problem right there," said Bean. "You're suspicious of my motives, and why?"
"Because of the standings."
"But aren't we all supposed to be commanders in the same fleet someday? Working together? Trusting each other? How sick would the IF be if all the ship captains and strike force commanders and fleet admirals spent all their time worrying about their standings instead of working together to try to beat the Formix?
I want to learn from you, Shen. I don't want to compete with you for some empty rank that the teachers put up on that wall in order to manipulate us. I'm sure you guys from Dragon are all concerned about learning from us losers, said Petra.
There it was, out in the open.
Yes. Yes, I am concerned. Precisely because I've been in Dragon Army. There are 9 of us here who know pretty much only what we learned from Ender. Well, brilliant as he was, he's not the only one in the fleet or even in the school who knows anything. I need to learn how you think. I don't need you keeping secrets from me, and you don't need me keeping secrets from you. Maybe part of what made Ender so good was that he kept all his toon leaders talking to each other, free to try things, but only as long as we shared what we were doing. There was more assent this time. Even the doubters were nodding thoughtfully.
So what I propose is this. A unanimous rejection of that board up there. Not only the one in here, but the one in the soldiers' mess too. We all agree not to pay attention to it, period. We ask the teachers to disconnect the things or leave them blank. If they refuse, we bring in sheets to cover it, or we throw chairs until we break it. We don't have to play their game. We can take charge of our own education and get ready to fight the real enemy. We have to remember always who the real enemy is.
Yeah, the teachers, said Dink Meeker. Everybody laughed. But then Dink Meeker stood up on the table beside Bean. I'm the senior commander here, now they've graduated all the oldest guys. I'm probably the oldest soldier left in battle school. So I propose that we adopt Bean's proposal right now, and I'll go to the teachers to demand that the boards be shut off. Is there anyone opposed?
Not a sound.
That makes it unanimous. If the boards are still on at lunch, let's bring sheets to cover them up. If they're still on at dinner, then forget using chairs to vandalize. Let's just refuse to take our armies to any battles until the boards are off.
Eli spoke up from where he stood in the serving line.
That'll shoot our standings all the...
Then Eli realized what he was saying and laughed at himself.
Damn, but they've got us brainwashed, haven't they?
Bean was still flushed with victory when, after breakfast, he made his way to Rabbit Barracks in order to meet his soldiers officially for the first time. Rabbit was on a midday practice schedule, so he only had about half an hour between breakfast and the first classes of the morning. Yesterday, when he talked to Itu, his mind had been on other things, with only the most cursory attention to what was going on inside Rabbit Barracks. But now he realized that, unlike Dragon Army, the soldiers in Rabbit were all of the regular age. Not one was even close to Bean's height. He looked like somebody's doll, and worse, he felt like that too, walking down the corridor between the bunks, seeing all these huge boys and a couple of girls looking down at him. Halfway down the bunks, he turned to face those he had already passed. Might as well address the problem immediately.
The first problem I see, said Bean loudly, is that you're all way too tall.
Nobody laughed. Bean died a little, but he had to go on.
I'm growing as fast as I can. Beyond that, I don't know what I can do about it.
Only now did he get a chuckle or two. But that was a relief that even a few were willing to meet him partway.
Our first practice together is at 10:30. As to our first battle together, I can't predict that, but I can promise you this. The teachers are not going to give me the traditional 3 months after my assignment to a new army. Same with all the other new commanders just appointed. They gave Ender Wiggin only a few weeks with Dragon before they went into battle, and Dragon was a new army, constructed out of nothing. Rabbit is a good army with a solid record. The only new person here is me. I expect the battles to begin in a matter of days, a week at most, and I expect battles to come frequently. So for the first couple of practices, you'll really be training me in your existing system. I need to see how you work with your toon leaders, how the toons work with each other, how you respond to orders, what commands you use. I'll have a couple of things to say that are more about attitude than tactics, but by and large, I want to see you doing things as you've always done them under Karn. It would help me, though, if you practiced with intensity, so I can see you at your sharpest. Are there any questions?
None. Silence.
One other thing. Day before yesterday, Bonesaw and some of his friends were stalking Ender Wiggin in the halls. I saw the danger, but the soldiers in Dragon Army were mostly too small to stand up against the crew Bonesaw had assembled. It wasn't an accident that when I needed help from my commander, I came to the door of Rabbit Army. This wasn't the closest barracks. I came to you because I knew that you had a fair-minded commander in Karn Karby, and I believed that his army would have the same attitude. Even if you didn't have any particular love for Ender Wiggin or Dragon Army, I knew that you would not stand by and let a bunch of thugs pound on a smaller kid that they couldn't beat fair and square in battle. And I was right about you. When you poured out of this barracks and stood as witnesses in the corridor, I was proud of what you stood for. I'm proud now to be one of you. That did it. Flattery rarely fails, and never does if it's sincere. By letting them know they had already earned his respect, he dissipated much of the tension, for of course they were worried that as a former dragon he would have contempt for the first army that Ender Wiggin beat. Now they knew better, and so he'd have a chance to win their respect as well. Itu started clapping, and the other boys joined in. It wasn't a long ovation, but it was enough to let him know the door was open, at least a crack. He raised his hands to silence the applause, just in time since it was already dying down. "I'd like to speak to the toon leaders for a few minutes in my quarters. The rest of you are dismissed till practice." Almost at once, Itu was beside him. "Good job," he said. "Only one mistake."
"What was that?"
"You aren't the only new person here."
"They assigned one of the dragon soldiers to Rabbit?"
For a moment, Bean allowed himself to hope that it would be Nikolai. He could use a reliable friend.
No such luck.
"No. A dragon soldier would be a veteran. I mean, this guy is new. He just got to battle school yesterday afternoon, and he was assigned here last night after you came by."
"A launchee? Assigned straight to an army?"
"Oh, we asked him about that, and he's had a lot of the same classwork. He went through a bunch of surgeries down on Earth, and he studied through it all, but..."
"You mean he's recovering from surgery, too?"
"No, he walks fine. He's..." "Look, why don't you just meet him? All I need to know is, do you want to assign him to a toon or what?"
"Eh, let's see him."
Itu led him to the back of the barracks. There he was, standing beside his bunk, several inches taller than Bean remembered, with legs of even length now, both of them straight. The boy he had last seen fondling Poke minutes before her dead body went into the river.
"Ho, Ashiel," said Bean.
"Ho, Bean," said Ashiel. He grinned winningly. "Looks like you're the big guy here."
"So to speak," said Bean.
"You two know each other?" said Itu. "We knew each other in Rotterdam," said Ashiel.
"They can't have assigned him to me by accident.
I never told anybody but Sister Carlotta about what he did, but how can I guess what she told the IF? Maybe they put him here because they thought both of us being from the Rotterdam streets, from the same crew, the same family, I might be able to help him get into the mainstream of the school faster. Or maybe they knew that he was a murderer who was able to hold a grudge for a long, long time and strike when least expected. Maybe they knew that he planned for my death as surely as he planned for Poke's. Maybe he's here to be my Bonesaw Madrid.
Except that I haven't taken any personal defense classes. And I'm half his size. I couldn't jump high enough to hit him in the nose. Whatever they were trying to accomplish by putting Ender's life at risk, Ender always had a better chance of surviving than I will. The only thing in my favor is that Ashiel wants to survive and prosper more than he wants vengeance. Since he can hold a grudge forever, he's in no hurry to act on it. And unlike Bonesaw, he'll never allow himself to be goaded into striking under circumstances where he'd be identifiable as the killer. As long as he thinks he needs me, and as long as I'm never alone, I'm probably safe."
"Safe." He shuddered. Poke felt safe, too.
"Ashiel was my commander there," said Bean. "He kept a group of us kids alive. Got us into the charity kitchens.
Bean is too modest, said Ashiel. The whole thing was his idea. He basically taught us the whole idea of working together. I've studied a lot since then, Bean. I've had a year of nothing but books and classes, when they weren't cutting into my legs and pulverizing and regrowing my bones. And I finally know enough to understand just what a leap you helped us make. From barbarism into civilization. Bean here is like a replay of human evolution. Bean was not so stupid as to fail to recognize when flattery was being used on him. At the same time, it was more than a little useful to have this new boy, straight from Earth, already know who Bean was and show respect for him. The evolution of the pygmies, anyway, said Bean. Bean was the toughest little bastard you ever saw on the street, I gotta tell you. No, this was not what Bean needed right now. Ashiel had just crossed the line from flattery into possession. Stories about Bean as a tough little bastard would, of necessity, set Ashiel up as Bean's superior, able to evaluate him. The stories might even be to Bean's credit, but they would serve more to validate Ashiel, make him an insider far faster than he would otherwise have been. And Bean did not want Ashiel to be inside yet. Ashiel was already going on as more soldiers gathered closer to here. The way I got recruited into Bean's crew was...
It wasn't my crew, said Bean, cutting him off. And here in battle school, we don't tell stories about home, and we don't listen to them either. So I'd appreciate it if you never spoke again of anything that happened in Rotterdam, not while you're in my army. He'd done the nice bit during his opening speech, but now was the time for authority. Ashiel didn't show any sign of embarrassment at the reprimand.
I get it. No problem.
It's time for you to get ready to go to class, said Bean to the soldiers. I need to confer with my toon leaders only. Bean pointed to Ambul, a Thai soldier who, according to what Bean read in the student reports, would have been a toon leader long ago, except for his tendency to disobey stupid orders. You, Ambul. I assign you to get Ashiel to and from his correct classes and acquaint him with how to wear a flash suit, how it works, and the basics of movement in the battle room. Ashiel, you are to obey Ambul like God until I assign you to a regular tune.
Ashiel grinned. But I don't obey God.
You think I don't know that? The correct answer to an order from me is yes, sir.
Ashiel's grin faded. Yes, sir.
I'm glad to have you here,
Bean lied.
Glad to be here, sir, said Ashiel. And Bean was reasonably sure that while Ashiel was not lying, his reason for being glad was very complicated, and certainly included by now a renewed desire to see Bean die.
For the first time, Bean understood the reason Ender had almost always acted as if he was oblivious to the danger from Bonesaw. It was a simple choice, really. Either he could act to save himself, or he could act to maintain control over his army. In order to hold real authority, Bean had to insist on complete obedience and respect from his soldiers, even if it meant putting Ashiel down, even if it meant increasing his personal danger. And yet another part of him thought, Ashiel wouldn't be here if he didn't have the ability to be a leader. He performed extraordinarily well as our papa in Rotterdam. It's my responsibility now to get him up to speed as quickly as possible for the sake of his potential usefulness to the IF. I can't let my personal fear interfere with that, or my hatred of him for what he did to Poke. So even if Ashiel is evil incarnate, my job is to turn him into a highly effective soldier with a good shot at becoming a commander. And in the meantime, I'll watch my back.
Chapter 20. Trial and Error.
You brought him up to battle school, didn't you?
Sister Carlotta, I'm on a leave of absence right now. That means I've been sacked, in case you don't understand how the IF handles these things.
Sacked? A miscarriage of justice. You ought to be shot.
If the Sisters of St. Nicholas had convents, your abbess would make you do serious penance for that unchristian thought.
You took him out of the hospital in Cairo and directly into space, even though I warned you.
Didn't you notice that you telephoned me on a regular exchange? I'm on Earth. Someone else is running Battle School.
He's a serial murderer now, you know. Not just the girl in Rotterdam. There was a boy there, too. The one Helga called Ulysses. They found his body a few weeks ago.
Ashiel has been in medical care for the past year.
The coroner estimates that the killing took place at least that long ago. The body was hidden behind some long-term storage near the fish market. It covered the smell, you see. And it goes on. A teacher at the school I put him in.
Ah, that's right. You put him in a school long before I did.
The teacher fell to his death from an upper story.
No witnesses, no evidence.
Exactly.
You see a trend here.
But that's my point. Ashiel does not kill carelessly, nor does he choose his victims at random. Anyone who has seen him helpless, crippled, beaten, he can't bear the shame. He has to expunge it by getting absolute power over the person who dared to humiliate him.
Oh, you're a psychologist now.
I laid the facts before an expert.
The supposed facts.
I'm not in court, Colonel. I'm talking to the man who put this killer in school with the child who came up with the original plan to humiliate him, who called for his death. My expert assured me that the chance of Ashiel not striking against Bean is zero.
It's not as easy as you think in space. No dock, you see.
Do you know how I knew you had taken him into space?
I'm sure you have your sources, both mortal and heavenly.
My dear friend, Dr. Vivian Delamar, was the surgeon who reconstructed Ashiel's leg.
As I recall, you recommended her.
Before I knew what Ashiel really was. When I found out, I called her, warned her to be careful, because my expert also said that she was in danger.
The one who restored his leg? Why?
No one has seen him more helpless than the surgeon who cuts into him as he lies there, drugged to the gills. Rationally, I'm sure he knew it was wrong to harm this woman who did him so much good. But then, the same would apply to Polk, the first time he killed. If it was the first time.
So, Dr. Vivian Delamar, you alerted her. What did she see? Did he murmur a confession under anesthetic?
We'll never know. He killed her.
You're joking.
I'm in Cairo. Her funeral is tomorrow. They were calling it a heart attack until I urged them to look for a hypodermic insertion mark. Indeed, they found one, and now it's on the books as a murder. Ashiel does know how to read. He learned which drugs would do the job. How he got her to sit still for it, I don't know.
How can I believe this, Sister Carlotta? The boy is generous, gracious. People are drawn to him. He's a born leader. People like that don't kill.
Who are the dead? The teacher who mocked him for his ignorance when he first arrived in the school, showed him up in front of the class. The doctor who saw him laid out under anesthetic. The street girl whose crew took him down. The street boy who vowed to kill him and made him go into hiding. Maybe the coincidence argument would sway a jury, but it shouldn't sway you.
Yes. You've convinced me that the danger might well be real. But I already alerted the teachers at Battle School that there might be some danger. And now I really am not in charge of Battle School.
You're still in touch. If you give them a more urgent warning, they'll take steps.
I'll give the appropriate warning.
You're lying to me.
You can tell that over the phone.
You want Bean exposed to danger.
Sister, yes, I do. But not this much of it. Whatever I can do, I'll do.
If you let Bean come to harm, God will have an accounting from you.
He'll have to get in line, Sister Carlotta. The IF court-martial takes precedence.
Bean looked down into the air vent in his quarters and marveled that he had ever been small enough to fit in there. What was he, then? The size of a rat? Fortunately, with a room of his own now, he wasn't limited to the outflow vents. He put his chair on top of his table and climbed up to the long, thin intake vents along the wall on the corridor side of his room. The vent trim pried out as several long sections. The paneling above it was separate from the riveted wall below. And it, too, came off fairly easily. Now there was room enough for almost any kid in battle school to shinny into the crawl space over the corridor ceiling. Bean stripped off his clothes and once again crawled into the air system. It was more cramped this time. It was surprising how much he'd grown. He made his way quickly to the maintenance area near the furnaces. He found how the lighting systems worked and carefully went around removing light bulbs and wall glow units in the areas he'd be needing. Soon there was a wide vertical shaft that was utterly dark when the door was closed, with deep shadows even when it was open. Carefully, he laid his trap.
Ashiel never ceased to be astonished at how the universe bent to his will. Whatever he wished seemed to come to him. Polk and her crew raising him above the other bullies, Sister Carlotta bringing him to the priest's school in Brussels, Dr. Delamar straightening his leg so he could run, so he looked no different from any other boy his age. And now, here he was in battle school, and who should be his first commander but little Bean, ready to take him under his wing, help him rise within this school. As if the universe were created to serve him, with all the people in it tuned to resonate with his desires. The battle room was cool beyond belief. War in a box. Point the gun, the other kid's suit freezes. Of course, Ambul had made the mistake of demonstrating this by freezing Ashiel and then laughing at his consternation at floating in the air, unable to move, unable to change the direction of his drift. People shouldn't do that. It was wrong, and it always gnawed at Ashiel until he was able to set things right. There should be more kindness and respect in the world. Like Bean. It looked so promising at first, but then Bean started putting him down, making sure the others saw that Ashiel used to be Bean's papa, but now he was just a soldier in Bean's army. There was no need for that. You don't go putting people down. Bean had changed. Back when Polk first put Ashiel on his back, shaming him in front of all those little children, it was Bean who showed him respect. "Kill him," Bean had said. He knew then, that tiny boy, he knew that even on his back, Ashiel was dangerous. But he seemed to have forgotten that now. In fact, Ashiel was pretty sure that Bean must have told Ambul to freeze his flash suit and humiliate him in the practice room, setting him up for the others to laugh at him. "I was your friend and protector, Bean, because you showed respect for me. But now I have to weigh that in the balance with your behavior here in battle school. No respect for me at all." The trouble was, the students in battle school were given nothing that could be used as a weapon, and everything was made completely safe. No one was ever alone, either, except the commanders, alone in their quarters. That was promising. But Ashiel suspected that the teachers had a way of tracking where every student was at any given time. He'd have to learn the system, learn how to evade it, before he could start setting things to rights. But he knew this. He'd learn what he needed to learn. Opportunities would appear, and he, being Ashiel, would see those opportunities and seize them. Nothing could interrupt his rise until he held all the power there was to hold within his hands. Then there would be perfect justice in the world. Not this miserable system that left so many children starving and ignorant and crippled on the streets, while others lived in privilege and safety and health. All those adults who had run things for thousands of years were fools or failures. But the universe obeyed Ashiel. He and he alone could correct the abuses. On his third day in battle school, Rabbit Army had its first battle with Bean as commander. They lost. they would not have lost if Ashiel had been commander. Bean was doing some stupid, touchy-feely thing, leaving things up to the Toon leaders. But it was obvious that the Toon leaders had been badly chosen by Bean's predecessor. If Bean was to win, he needed to take tighter control. When he tried to suggest this to Bean, the child only smiled knowingly, a maddeningly superior smile, and told him that the key to victory was for each Toon leader, and eventually each soldier, to see the whole situation and act independently to bring about victory. It made Ashiel want to slap him. It was so stupid, so wrong-headed. The one who knew how to order things did not leave it up to others to create their little messes in the corners of the world. He took the reins and pulled, sharp and hard. He whipped his men into obedience. As Frederick the Great said, "The soldier must fear his officers more than he fears the bullets of the enemy." You could not rule without the naked exercise of power. The followers must bow their heads to the leader. They must surrender their heads, using only the mind and will of the leader to rule them. No one but Ashiel seemed to understand that this was the great strength of the buggers. They had no individual minds, only the mind of the hive. They submitted perfectly to the queen. "We cannot defeat the buggers until we learn from them, become like them." But there was no point in explaining this to Bean. He would not listen. Therefore, he would never make Rabbit Army into a hive. He was working to create chaos. It was unbearable. Unbearable. Yet, just when Ashiel thought he couldn't bear the stupidity and waste any longer, Bean called him to his quarters. Ashiel was startled when he entered to find that Bean had removed the vent cover and part of the wall panel, giving him access to the air duct system. This was not at all what Ashiel had expected. "Take your clothes off," said Bean. Ashiel smelled an attempt at humiliation. Bean was taking off his own uniform. "They track us through the uniforms," said Bean. "If you aren't wearing one, they don't know where you are, except the gym and the battle room, where they have really expensive equipment to track each warm body. We aren't going to either of those places, so strip." Bean was naked. As long as Bean went first, Ashiel could not be shamed by doing the same. "Ender and I used to do this," said Bean. "Everybody thought Ender was such a brilliant commander, but the truth is he knew all the plans of the other commanders because we'd go spying through the air ducts. And not just the commanders, either. We found out what the teachers were planning. We always knew it in advance. Not hard to win that way." Ashiel laughed. This was too cruel. Bean might be a fool, but this Ender that Ashiel had heard so much about, he knew what he was doing. "It takes two people, is that it? To get where I can spy on the teachers, there's a wide shaft, pitch black. I can't climb down. I need somebody to lower me down and haul me back up. I didn't know who in Rabbit Army I could trust, and then there you were, a friend from the old days." It was happening again, the universe bending to his will. He and Bean would be alone. No one would be tracking where they were. No one would know what had happened. "I'm in," said Ashiel. "Boost me up," said Bean. "You're tall enough to climb up alone." Clearly, Bean had come this way many times before. He scampered through the crawl space, his feet and butt flashing in the spill from the corridor lights. Ashiel noted where he put his hands and feet, and soon was as adept as Bean at picking his way through. Every time he used his leg, he marveled at the use of it. It went where he wanted it to go, and had the strength to hold him. Dr. Delamar might be a skilled surgeon, but even she said that she had never seen a body respond to the surgery as Ashiel's did. His body knew how to be whole, expected to be strong. All the time before, those crippled years had been the universe's way of teaching Ashiel the unbearability of disorder. And now Ashiel was perfect of body, ready to move ahead in setting things to rights. Ashiel very carefully noted the route they took. If the opportunity presented itself, he would be coming back alone. He could not afford to get lost or give himself away. No one could know that he had ever been in the air system. As long as he gave them no reason, the teachers would never suspect him. All they knew was that he and Bean were friends. And when Ashiel grieved for the child, his tears would be real. They always were, for there was a nobility to these tragic deaths, a grandeur as the great universe worked its will through Ashiel's adept hands. The furnaces roared as they came into a room where the framing of the station was visible. Fire was good. It left so little residue. People died when they accidentally fell into fire. It happened all the time. Bean crawling around alone. It would be good if they went near the furnace. Instead, Bean opened a door into a dark space. The light from the opening showed a black gap not far inside. "Don't step over the edge of that," Bean said cheerfully. He picked up a loop of very fine cord from the ground. "It's a deadline. Safety equipment. Keeps workmen from drifting off into space when they're working on the outside of the station. Ender and I set it up. It goes over a beam up there and keeps me centered in the shaft. You can't grip it in your hands. It cuts too easily if it slides across your skin. So you loop it tight around your body. No sliding, see? And brace yourself. The gravity's not that intense, so I just jump off. We measured it out, so I stop right at the level of the vents leading to the teacher's quarters." "Doesn't it hurt when you stop?"
"Like a bitch," said Bean.
"No pain, no gain, right? I take off the deadline, I snag it on a flap of metal, and it stays there till I get back. I'll tug on it 3 times when I get it back on. Then you pull me back up. But not with your hands. You go out the door and walk out there. When you get to the place where we came in, go around the beam there and go till you touch the wall. Just wait there until I can get myself swinging and land back here on this ledge. Then I unloop myself and you come back in and we leave the deadline for next time. Simple, see?"
"Got it," said Ashiel.
Instead of walking to the wall, it would be simple enough to just keep walking. Get Bean floating in the air where he couldn't get hold of anything. Plenty of time then to find a way to tie it off inside that dark room. With the roar of the furnaces and fans, nobody would hear Bean calling for help. Then Ashiel would have time to explore, figure out how to get into the furnaces, swing Bean back, strangle him, carry the body to the fire, drop the dead line down the shaft. Nobody would find it. Quite possibly, no one would ever find Bean. Or if they did, his soft tissues would be consumed. All evidence of strangulation would be gone. Very neat. There'd be some improvisation, but there always was. Ashiel could handle little problems as they came up. Ashiel looped the dead line over his head, then drew it tight under his arms as Bean climbed into the loop at the other end. "Set," said Ashiel. "Make sure it's tight, so it doesn't have any slack to cut you when I hit bottom." "Yes, it's tight." But Bean had to check. He got a finger under the line. "Tighter," said Bean. Ashiel tightened it more. "Good," said Bean. "That's it. Do it." Do it? Bean was the one who was supposed to do it. Then the deadline went taut, and Ashiel was lifted off his feet. With a few more yanks, he hung in the air in the dark shaft. The dead line dug harshly into his skin. When Bean said, "Do it," he was talking to someone else. Someone who was already here, lying in wait. The traitorous little bastard. Ashiel said nothing, however. He reached up to see if he could touch the beam above him, but it was out of reach. Nor could he climb the line, not with bare hands, not with the line drawn taut by his own body weight. He wriggled on the line, starting himself swinging. But no matter how far he went in any direction, he touched nothing. No wall, no place where he might find purchase. Time to talk. "What's this about, Bean?"
It's about Poke, said Bean.
She's dead, Bean.
You kissed her. You killed her. You put her in the river.
Ashiel felt the blood run hot into his face. No one saw that. He was guessing. But then, how did he know that Ashiel had kissed her first, unless he saw?
You're wrong, said Ashiel. How sad if I am. Then the wrong man will die for the crime.
Die? Be serious, Bean. You aren't a killer.
But the hot, dry air of the shaft will do it for me. You'll dehydrate in a day. Your mouth's already a little dry, isn't it? And then you'll just keep hanging here, mummifying. This is the intake system, so the air gets filtered and purified. Even if your body stinks for a while, nobody will smell it. Nobody will see you. You're above where the light shines from the door, and nobody comes in here anyway. No, the disappearance of Ashiel will be the mystery of Battle School. They'll tell ghost stories about you to frighten the launchies.
Bean, I didn't do it.
I saw you, Ashiel, you poor fool. I don't care what you say. I saw you. I never thought I'd have the chance to make you pay for what you did to her. Poke did nothing but good to you. I told her to kill you, but she had mercy. She made you king of the streets. And for that you killed her? I didn't kill her. Let me lay it out for you, Ashiel, since you're clearly too stupid to see where you are. First thing is, you forgot where you were. Back on Earth, you were used to being a lot smarter than everybody around you, but here in Battle School, everybody is as smart as you, and most of us are smarter. You think Ambul didn't see the way you looked at him? You think he didn't know he was marked for death after he laughed at you? You think the other soldiers in Rabbit doubted me when I told them about you? They'd already seen that there was something wrong with you. The adults might have missed it. They might buy into the way you suck up to them, but we didn't. And since we just had a case of one kid trying to kill another, nobody was going to put up with it again. Nobody was going to wait for you to strike. Because here's the thing. We don't give a shit about fairness here. We're soldiers. Soldiers do not give the other guy a sporting chance. Soldiers shoot in the back, lay traps and ambushes, lie to the enemy, and outnumber the other bastard every chance they get. Your kind of murder only works among civilians, and you were too cocky, too stupid, too insane to realize that.
Ashiel knew that Bean was right. He had miscalculated grossly. He had forgotten that when Bean said for Poke to kill him, he had not just been showing respect for Ashiel. He had also been trying to get Ashiel killed. This just wasn't working out very well.
So you have only two ways for this to end. One way, you just hang there. We take turns watching to make sure you don't figure out some way out of this until you're dead, and then we leave you and go about our lives. The other way, you confess to everything, and I mean everything, not just what you think I already know, and you keep confessing. Confess to the teachers. Confess to the psychiatrists they send you to. Confess your way into a mental hospital back on Earth. We don't care which you choose. All that matters is that you never again walk freely through the corridors of Battle School or anywhere else. So, what will it be? Dry out on the line or let the teachers know just how crazy you are?
Bring me a teacher. I'll confess.
Didn't you hear me explain how stupid we're not? You confess now, before witnesses, with a recorder. We don't bring some teacher up here to see you hanging there and feel all squishy sorry for you. Any teacher who comes here will know exactly what you are, and there will be about 6 Marines to keep you subdued and sedated, because, Ashiel, they don't play around here. They don't give people chances to escape. You've got no rights here. You don't get rights again until you're back on Earth. Here's your last chance. Confession time.
Ashiel almost laughed out loud, but it was important for Bean to think that he had won. As for the moment he had, Ashiel could see now that there was no way for him to remain in Battle School,
But Bean wasn't smart enough just to kill him and have done. No, Bean was completely unnecessarily allowing him to live. And as long as Ashiel was alive, then time would move things his way. The universe would bend until the door was opened and Ashiel went free, and it would happen sooner rather than later. You shouldn't have left a door open for me, Bean, because I will kill you someday. You and everyone else who has seen me helpless here.
All right, said Ashiel. I killed Poke. I strangled her and put her in the river.
Go on.
What more? You want to know how she wet herself and took a shit while she was dying? You want to know how her eyes bugged out?
One murder doesn't get you psychiatric confinement, Ashiel. You know you've killed before.
What makes you think so?
Because it didn't bother you.
It never bothered. Not even the first time. You just don't understand power. If it bothers you, you aren't fit to have power.
I killed Ulysses, of course, but just because he was a nuisance.
And?
I'm not a mass murderer, Bean.
You live to kill, Ashiel. Spill it all, and then convince me that it really was all.
But Ashiel had just been playing. He had already decided to tell it all.
The most recent was Dr. Vivian Delamar, he said. I told her not to do the operations under total anesthetic. I told her to leave me alert. I could take it even if there was pain. But she had to be in control. Well, if she really loved control so much, why did she turn her back on me? And why was she so stupid as to think I really had a gun? By pressing hard in her back, I made it so she didn't even feel the needle go in, right next to where the tongue depressors were poking her. Died of a heart attack right there in her own office. Nobody even knew I'd been in there. You want more?
I want it all, Ashiel.
It took 20 minutes, but Ashiel gave them the whole chronicle. All 7 times he had set things right. He liked it, actually, telling them like this. Nobody had ever had a chance to understand how powerful he was till now. He wanted to see their faces. That's the only thing that was missing. He wanted to see the disgust that would reveal their weakness, their inability to look power in the face. Machiavelli understood. If you intend to rule, you don't shrink from killing. Saddam Hussein knew it. You have to be willing to kill with your own hand. You can't stand back and let others do it for you all the time. And Stalin understood it, too. You can never be loyal to anybody, because that only weakens you. Lenin was good to Stalin, gave him his chance, raised him out of nothing to be the keeper of the gate to power. But that didn't stop Stalin from imprisoning Lenin and then killing him. That's what these fools would never understand. All those military writers were just armchair philosophers. All that military history, most of it was useless. War was just one of the tools that the great men used to get and keep their power. And the only way to stop a great man was the way Brutus did it.
Bean, you're no Brutus.
Turn on the light. Let me see the faces.
But the light did not go on. When he was finished, when they left, there was only the light through the door, silhouetting them as they left. 5 of them, all naked but carrying the recording equipment. They even tested it to make sure it had picked up Ashiel's confession. He heard his own voice, strong and unwavering, proud of what he'd done. That would prove to the weaklings that he was insane. They would keep him alive. Until the universe bent things to his will yet again, and set him free to reign with blood and horror on Earth. Since they hadn't let him see their faces, he'd have no choice. When all the power was in his hands, he'd have to kill everyone who was in battle school at this time. That would be a good idea anyway,
since all the brilliant military minds of the age had been assembled here at one time or another, it was obvious that in order to rule safely, Ashiel would have to get rid of everyone whose name had ever been on a battle school roster. Then there'd be no rivals. And he'd keep testing children as long as he lived, finding any with the slightest spark of military talent. Herod understood how you stay in power.
Part 6. Victor. Chapter 21. Guesswork.
We are not waiting any longer for Colonel Graf to repair the damage done to Ender Wiggin. Wiggin doesn't need tactical school for the job he'll be doing. And we need the others to move on at once. They have to get the feel of what the old ships can do before we bring them here and put them on the simulators. And that takes time.
They've only had a few games.
I shouldn't have allowed them as much time as I have. ISL is 2 months away from you, and by the time they're done with tactical, the voyage from there to Fleetcom will be 4 months. That gives them only 3 months in tactical before we have to bring them to command school. 3 months in which to compress 3 years of training.
I should tell you that Bean seems to have passed Colonel Graf's last test.
Test? When I relieved Colonel Graf, I thought his sick little testing program ended as well.
We didn't know how dangerous this Ashiel was. We had been warned of some danger, but he seemed so likable. I'm not faulting Colonel Graf, you understand. He had no way of knowing.
Knowing what?
That Ashiel is a serial killer.
That should make Graf happy. Ender's count is up to 2.
I'm not joking, sir. Ashiel has 7 murders on his tally.
And he passed the screening?
He knew how to answer the psychological tests.
Please tell me that none of the 7 took place at battle school.
Number 8 would have, but Bean got him to confess.
Bean's a priest now?
Actually, sir, it was deft strategy. He outmaneuvered Ashiel, led him into an ambush, and confession was the only escape.
So Ender, the nice middle-class American boy, kills the kid who wants to beat him up in the bathroom. And Bean, the hoodlum street kid, turns a serial killer over to law enforcement.
The more significant thing for our purposes is that Ender was good at building teams. But he beat Bonzo hand-to-hand, one-on-one. And then Bean, a loner who had almost no friends after a year in the school, he beats Ashiel by assembling a team to be his defense and his witnesses. I have no idea if Graf predicted these outcomes, but the result was that his tests got each boy to act not only against our expectations, but also against his own predilections.
Predilections? Major Anderson.
It will all be in my report.
Try to write the entire thing without using the word predilection once?
Yes, sir.
I've assigned the destroyer Condor to take the group.
How many do you want, sir?
We have need of a maximum of 11 at any one time. We have Carby, B, and Momo on their way to tactical already. But Graf tells me that of those 3, only Carby is likely to work well with Wiggin. We do need to hold a slot for Ender, but it wouldn't hurt to have a spare. So send 10.
Which 10?
How the hell should I know? Well, Bean, him for sure. And the 9 others that you think would work best with either Bean or Ender in command, whichever one it turns out to be.
One list for both possible commanders?
With Ender as the first choice. We want them all to train together. Become a team.
The orders came at 1700. Bean was supposed to board the Condor at 1800. It's not as if he had anything to pack. An hour was more time than they gave Ender. So Bean went and told his army what was happening, where he was going.
We've only had 5 games, said Itu.
Got to catch the bus when it comes to the stop, ne? Said Bean.
Eh? Said Itu.
Who else? Asked Amble.
They didn't tell me. Just Tactical school. We don't even know where it is. Somewhere in space, said Itu. No.
Really?
It was lame, but they laughed. It wasn't all that hard a goodbye. He'd only been with Rabbit for 8 days. Sorry we didn't win any for you, said Itu.
We would have won, if I'd wanted to, said Bean.
They looked at him like he was crazy. I was the one who proposed that we get rid of the standings, stop caring who wins. How would it look if we do that and I win every time?
It would look like you really did care about the standings, said Itu.
That's not what bothers me, said another Toon leader. Are you telling me you set us up to lose?
No.
I'm telling you I had a different priority. What do we learn from beating each other?
Nothing.
We're never going to have to fight human children. We're going to have to fight buggers. So what do we need to learn? How to coordinate our attacks, how to respond to each other, how to feel the course of the battle and take responsibility for the whole thing, even if you don't have command. That's what I was working on with you guys. And if we won, if we went in and mopped up the walls with them using my strategy, what does that teach you? You already worked with a good commander. What you needed to do was work with each other. So I put you in tough situations, and by the end, you were finding ways to bail each other out, to make it work. We never made it work well enough to win.
That's not how I measured it.
You made it work. When the buggers come again, they're going to make things go wrong. Besides the normal friction of war, they're going to be doing stuff we couldn't think of because they're not human. They don't think like us. So plans of attack, what good are they then? We try, we do what we can, but what really counts is what you do when command breaks down. When it's just you with your squadron, and you with your transport, and you with your beat-up strike force that's got only 5 weapons among 8 ships. How do you help each other? How do you make do? That's what I was working on. And then I went back to the officers' mess and told them what I learned, what you guys showed me. I learned stuff from them, too. I told you all the stuff I learned from them, right?
Well, you could have told us what you were learning from us, said Itu.
They were all still a bit resentful.
I didn't have to tell you. You learned it.
At least you could have told us it was okay not to win.
But you were supposed to try to win. I didn't tell you because it only works if you think it counts.
Like when the buggers come. It'll count then, for real. That's when you get really smart, when losing means that you and everybody you ever cared about, the whole human race, will die. Look, I didn't think we'd have long together, so I made the best use of the time for you and for me. You guys are all ready to take command of armies.
What about you, Bean? Asked Amble.
He was smiling, but there was an edge to it. You ready to command a fleet?
I don't know.
It depends on whether they want to win. Bean grinned. Here's the thing, Bean, said Amble. Soldiers don't like to lose.
And that, said Bean, is why losing is a much more powerful teacher than winning.
They heard him. They thought about it. Some of them nodded. If you live, Bean added, and grinned at them. They smiled back.
I gave you the best thing I could think of to give you during this week, said Bean, and learned from you as much as I was smart enough to learn.
Thank you. He stood and saluted them. They saluted back. He left and went to Rat Army Barracks.
Nikolai just got his orders, the Toon leader told him.
For a moment, Bean wondered if Nikolai would be going to tactical school with him. His first thought was, no way is he ready. His second thought was, I wish he could come. His third thought was, I'm not much of a friend, to think first how he doesn't deserve to be promoted.
What orders? Bean asked.
He's got him an army. Hell, he wasn't even a Toon leader here. Just got here last week.
Which army?
Rabbit. The Toon leader looked at Bean's uniform again.
Oh. I guess he's replacing you.
Bean laughed and headed for the quarters he had just left.
Nikolai was sitting inside with the door open, looking lost.
Can I come in?
Nikolai looked up and grinned.
Tell me you're here to take your army back.
I've got a hint for you.
Try to win.
They think that's important. I couldn't believe you lost all five.
You know, for a school that doesn't list standings anymore, everybody sure keeps track.
I keep track of you.
Nikolai, I wish you were coming with me.
What's happening, Bean?
Is this it? Are the buggers here?
I don't know.
Come on, you figure these things out.
If the buggers were really coming, would they leave all you guys here in the station? Or send you back to Earth? Or evacuate you to some obscure asteroid?
I don't know. Some things point to the end being really close. Other things seem like nothing important's going to happen anywhere around here.
So maybe they're about to launch this huge fleet against the bugger world and you guys are supposed to grow up on the voyage.
Maybe, said Bean.
But the time to launch that fleet was right after the second invasion.
Well, what if they didn't find out where the bugger homeworld was until now?
That stopped Bean cold.
Never crossed my mind, said Bean.
I mean, they must have been sending signals home. All we had to do was track that direction. Follow the light, you know? That's what it says in the manuals.
What if they don't communicate by light?
Light may take a year to go a light year, but it's still faster than anything else.
Anything else that we know about, said Nikolai.
Bean just looked at him.
Oh, I know. That's stupid. The laws of physics and all that.
You know, I keep thinking, that's all. I don't like to rule things out just because they're impossible.
Bean laughed.
Merda, Nikolai. I should have let you talk more and me talk less back when we slept across from each other.
Bean.
You know I'm not a genius.
All genius is here, Nikolai.
I was scraping by.
So maybe you're not a Napoleon, Nikolai. Maybe you're just an Eisenhower. Don't expect me to cry for you.
It was Nikolai's turn to laugh.
I'll miss you, Bean.
Thanks for coming with me to face Ashiel, Nikolai.
Guy gave me nightmares.
Me too.
And I'm glad you brought the others along too.
Itu, Amble, Crazy Tom. I felt like we could have used six more and Ashiel was hanging from a wire.
Guys like him, you can understand why they invented hanging.
Someday, said Bean, you're going to need me the way I needed you. And I'll be there.
I'm sorry I didn't join your squad, Bean.
You were right, said Bean. I asked you because you were my friend, and I thought I needed a friend, but I should have been a friend, too, and seen what you needed.
I'll never let you down again.
Bean threw his arms around Nikolai. Nikolai hugged him back.
Bean remembered when he left Earth, hugging Sister Carlotta, analyzing.
This is what she needs. It costs me nothing, therefore I'll give her the hug.
I'm not that kid anymore.
Maybe because I was able to come through for Poke after all.
Too late to help her, but I still got her killer to admit it. I still got him to pay something, even if it can never be enough.
Go meet your army, Nikolai, said Bean. I've got a spaceship to catch.
He watched Nikolai go out the door and knew, with a sharp pang of regret, that he would never see his friend again.
Dymac stood in Major Anderson's quarters. Captain Dymac, I watched Colonel Graff indulge your constant complaints, your resistance to his orders, and I kept thinking, Dymac might be right, but I would never tolerate such lack of respect if I were in command. I'd throw him out on his ass and write insubordinate in about 40 places in his dossier. I thought I should tell you that before you make your complaint. Dymac blinked. Go ahead. I'm waiting.
It isn't so much a complaint as a question.
Then ask your question.
I thought you were supposed to choose a team that was equally compatible with Ender and with Bean.
The word equally was never used as far as I can recall. But even if it was, did it occur to you that it might be impossible? I could have chosen 40 brilliant children who would all have been proud and eager to serve under Andrew Wiggin. How many would be equally proud and eager to serve under Bean? Dymac had no answer for that.